This is a recording from the Piedmont Council of the Arts, made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for lectures, radio shows, and more. On September 30th, 2008, the Piedmont Council of the Arts held the first in a series of creative conversations. The City Space meeting room on the downtown mall was packed with participants eager to discuss the future of arts education. PCA Executive Director Maggie Guggenheimer began the conversation by introducing some of her organization's goals in creating the series.
In years past, PCA had a roundtable series. It's very much like what we're doing here, although I'd never experienced it. My understanding is that it was a gathering of arts organization representatives, primarily performing arts organizations, to get together and discuss ideas and figure out what common challenges were in the arts sector, if there are any opportunities for collaboration. And we wanted to kind of take that idea and expand it, not just beyond the performing arts sector, but beyond the arts community and into the community at large by bringing in other cultural groups, other agencies, community leaders, city councilors, Albemarle Board of Supervisors. Obviously, none of them are with us today, but down the road, we hope that this sort of forum will grow into something that really connects the arts community with the community at large and helps us feel like we're all actively engaged in what's happening and what kinds of things we could be doing together that we're not. And Kate Dodrill, who's our communications manager, and I began to develop this the Creative Conversation series after a model of the Americans for the Arts organization. If anyone hasn't checked out that website, you definitely should. It's americansforthearts.org, I believe. And they kind of got the idea planted in our heads that we should get going on this sooner rather than later. And we've identified three topics that we are going to discuss for the 2008-2009 year. This is the first topic, arts education in our community. Second topic is going to be marketing Charlottesville as a creative community. And the third topic is increasing community-wide access to the arts. And we fully intend to do a series, maybe not three program series, but some sort of series every year and continue building on what we learn. Another thing I want to point out and kind of pose to the group before we get started and come back to afterwards is how this group might want to reconnect again outside of our three program series. So if you think that this is a really fruitful discussion and we should coordinate some brown bag lunches or some after work get-togethers where we can continue the conversation, we want to hear from you about that. There may be other ways that we can connect through listservs or through website postings on the PCA website, but we want to keep that open and know that this is not the beginning and the end of our conversation. So without further ado, I think I'm going to stop and let people introduce themselves. And Kate's going to tell you instructions for introductions.
Yeah, we just thought the very basic information, name, title, let us know if you or if your organization is a member of PCA, and then just real briefly how you're connected to arts education or something you've recently done. And we're trying to keep it under a minute for each person. I know it's a lot of information, but if we could just do a small summary and introduce ourselves.
It's a snapshot.
Yeah.
I'm Andy Johnson. I'm coordinator for Fine Art and Gifted Education for Albemarle County. And I work coordinating work with art teachers, gifted teachers, and art programs across the county. Scheduling, getting performances for students and students too.
I'm Jenny Smith. I'm a student at UVA. I'm the chair of the Student Arts Committee on student council. What brings me here today, I guess, is that we're going to start an arts education program within the student body where student artists and students who are studying education can go into the community and teach art and run a program where they're really connecting with the community.
My name is Gloria Rockhold. I'm the district coordinator for Latino Community Relations at Albemarle County Schools. And I'm very interested in incorporating art education within the Latino community because I feel like they don't have as much an opportunity for art. And we're working in collaboration with The Bridge and the Boys and Girls Club to offer an 8-week photography class in the Southwood neighborhood, which is a very low-income neighborhood for Latino, where the majority of the kids living there are Latinos. So we had 7 people show up last week, and we've got 7 more for next week. So word of mouth is growing, so it's a good thing.
Hi, Hi, my name is Harold Foley. I run an after school program in West Haven, a low income area in Charlottesville. I'm connected with the arts with the bridge with Lighthouse and the Music Resource Center. We have done plenty of things in the past, and I find that the kids are real interested in anything that's artsy, music, video, and painting. So my interest is to find out more about what's going on and how I can enhance my program.
I'm Sally Hart, and I'm the owner of the Appomattox Ballet Theater. And the reason that I'm here is because I have been offering free scholarships on need-based, and I have not had a huge response. And so I do want everyone to know that I have free scholarships, and that I'm also been trying to get into the schools to do performances for the kids so that they can see the different types of dance and so that they can understand what it entails. And I've kind of gotten hit with a brick wall. So I'm trying to figure out how to get in to reach these kids.
I'm Jeff Suling. I'm Fine Arts Coordinator for the Charlottesville City Schools, and work with all the fine arts teachers in a school division that really believes in the arts and that it should be a part of everyone's education. And it's really been a pleasure being in this position for over 20 years and knowing a lot of you. Personally, I also am the core director at PVCC, and that's what I do for my joy, as well as working with all the other fine arts teachers.
I'm Rhonda Hewitt. I'm the Education and Outreach Director with Live Arts, and my job entails creating an educational youth program at Live Arts, including classes that are after school, camps, whether it's in the summer or spring break that we do with Lighthouse. Also, we have our own teen productions. I'm also in charge of adult education. We offer a lot of free programming for adults, whether it's with playwrights, local playwrights, or the classes for adults that are on the weekends or in the evenings. So it's well-rounded. I'm also trying to outreach myself into schools and bring schools into Live Arts.
I'm Jan Chevalier, and I have two hats. Jane Ann and I founded an organization called PERKS, and I'll let Jane Ann tell you about that. Otherwise, we'll be duplicating each other. And the other thing I do is I'm chair of the Ashland Opera Festival Guild, and we are an organization that supports Ashland, but also is trying to educate the community and children and really promote opera in the community. So I have a challenge of trying to teach people about opera who seem a little scared of it.
I'm Jean Wilhelm, and I've been involved in arts education ever since I graduated from the University of Washington School of Drama. I moved to Charlottesville in the late 50s, so I've been around a long time. I've worked in schools, I've worked in community organizations, and I've worked in nonprofit tax-exempt organizations. I am currently on the Education Committee of the Piedmont Council of the Arts, Ashland Opera Festival, Paramount Theater, Very Special Arts of Charlottesville and Albemarle, with people with special needs, the Virginia Festival of the Book, the Festival of Cultures, which is a city adult language ESL program, and I work on a calendar to try to get all this information out to the right people in the right place.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Howerton. I'm working in a volunteer capacity with the newly formed Stanton Arts Council, and members of our organization have programs exclusively for children, and other members of the organization from galleries and different places have little programs or outreach efforts for children. So today I'm here just kind of on a little learning tour. See what you're doing and how we can utilize that where we are.
My name is Eric Curran. I'm with the American Shakespeare Center, also in Stanton. And we are members of the Piedmont Council for the Arts. We offer about We offer school matinees to about 10,000 school children a year. We offer programs for adults on leadership training. We work with the Federal Executive Institute in Charlottesville a lot. We also offer programs in schools where our actors go into schools, and some of these schools are with underserved children, and we work with the NEA to subsidize that. And we're looking to basically cure kids of Shakespeare. We have this idea that Shakespeare is boring, that the language is hard to understand, and that the plays are irrelevant. And we want to bust all these ideas and help kids really never to get these ideas in the first place, so they can have a healthy attitude towards Shakespeare and live drama as they go into their adult lives.
I'm Kathy Von Stork, and I'm the new educational coordinator at the Paramount. I've been in this position for a month now. And I did bring some brochures on our educational program this year. We have 8 performances that we're bringing to the Paramount for school children, K through 12, and their teachers, and already we have 8,000 kids that will be bringing to the theater this year. And many of those performances will also be offered to the public for an evening or a matinee. And so my job is to facilitate all of that and expose as many children as possible to live performing arts at a beautiful historic venue. So that's my role.
My name is Steve Lehman. I direct the Charlottesville Municipal Band. We do a 10 concert series concerts a year in a variety of venues around town. Most recently, 6 concerts a summer in the Paramount. And one of my goals is to expand our offerings for kids and find ways to get the band and some of our ensembles into schools and more kid-friendly places.
I'm Scott Colley. I'm on the board of the Municipal Band, and I figured I could serve the board a little better if I knew what you all were up to. Interestingly, I was for 38 years professor of Shakespeare, and not that scary, is it? Anyway, I'm from Charlottesville, but lived elsewhere for 45 years, so I've come back and I've found my way nearly everywhere, with a few exceptions. So the university is still a challenge. There are buildings where they used to be neighborhoods, but glad to be here.
I'm Sherry Smith, and I have a company here in Charlottesville called Lander Creative, and we work with artists, nonprofits, educators, all different kinds of people who are involved in the arts. And one of our missions is to create collaborations primarily between for-profit, nonprofit, looking at the multi-generational issues and pulling people together to do really cool things. We do a lot of networking. I'm also a teacher. I've taught for many, many years prior to having this company. I am part of the Spectrum Arts program in the summer, which is just a total hoot, a lot of fun. And right now, one of my major clients, the Artisan Center of Virginia, I serve as their development director, and they're looking to build a studio school here in Charlottesville. And we're just now laying the foundation for that, and there will be a lot of really interesting educational programming available to young people around craft.
George, I'm going to interrupt you and take the conversation back to the second row, and we'll come back to you.
I'm Corey Tadelbaum. I'm the program manager at the Music Resource Center. The MRC is a nonprofit after-school music education program for 7th through 12th graders, focusing mostly on performance and recording. We have recording studios, beat production studios, try to offer as many private instrument lessons as we can. And we've also started teaching a 4-credit high school class with K-Tech this year, music technology.
I'm Damani Harrison. I'm also with the Music Resource Center. I'm the outreach coordinator / volunteer coordinator / garbage man. I work with Corey pretty much hand in hand, my partner in crime, and I'm teaching the K-Tech program as well as also teaching an arts class with the Charlottesville Charter. school for sixth grade students as well. And we'll continue to do that for the next few years until they graduate from high school. I'm responsible for just building relationships between the Mutual Resource Center and other organizations that want to work with us.
My name is George Sampson. I was brought here by the university in 1994 with the title of Director of Development for the Arts. So over that span of time, we initiated what became known as the Arts Grounds Project, resulting in the renovation of Fairweather Hall, brand new studio art building, Ruffin Hall, that just opened left. It's actually opening in 2 days officially, and expansion for the architecture school. So those three projects I can say I had a little hand in. 3 years ago, by kind of mutual agreement, I got really frankly burned out on fundraising and moved into teaching. So I'm launching programs at the university in my field, which is arts administration, typically nonprofit, but not exclusively. In that regard, I'm able to do a bit more in terms of programming, reaching out into the community. Some of you have already had a chance to work with you or your institutions. I'd like to extend the offer to try to work with all of you, if at all possible, in some capacity. November 13th, well, the week of November 9th through 16th, the dance program at the university and my program are co-sponsoring the presence in town of the Bill T. Jones Arnie Zane Dance Company from New York City. This is an extraordinary opportunity because they're not coming here to do performances. They're coming here to do research for a piece they've been commissioned to do by the Ravinia Festival outside Chicago on Abraham Lincoln. So I and students working with me are seeking 90 people from both within the university and within the community to form a company with Bill T. I guess that's the best I can say at the moment. We don't know a lot more about that. The performance will be on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock outside, unless it's pouring rain, somewhere at the university on the Central Grounds. We're talking about that right now. Some of you are already involved with us in outreach efforts. We would like to get involved with others. We can't obviously go more than the 90 people, so we can't have everybody involved with that. But we have other events during the week we would like to extend, if I may, very quickly. Thursday, midday, time yet to be determined. We hope to stage a lecture demonstration for public and private school kids at the Paramount. We've already got that established. We'd like to fill it with 1,000 people. We're not experts at reaching out to the Albemarle and Charlottesville school systems or the private schools either, because I'm using a lot of undergraduate kids to do this for me. One of them's at the table today. And so if any of this is resonance, we'd love to have contact. We want to try to fill the place at that time on Thursday. There will be other some lectures and other kinds of talks going on throughout the week. A small master class for people interested in having a class with Bill, probably at the Music Resource Center on, I think, Wednesday night, culminating in this event on Saturday. So apologize for taking a bit more time than I should, but it's very much in the immediate future, and I wanted to share that with you. Thank you.
And I'll interrupt by saying that the contact information for everyone who we thought had registered is on a sheet. So George's contact information is on there. And for those of you who aren't on there, you can send me an email, and I'll resend the list a new contact information list so everyone can connect.
I'm Jane Ann Young. I was Director of Education at the Bailey Art Museum, now called the University of Virginia Art Museum, as you all know, for 30 years. And one of the things I did at the museum was to establish student docent program, two of which are sitting in front of you, who were student docents with me. It was the first program of its type in the country at the time. I'm currently working with JAS, as you mentioned, with what we call PERKS, People Enriching Resources for Kids. And we started this program with Clark School, and we went into Clark School with a group of volunteers and art prints and SOLs. And we developed a program where every child at Clark School sees these prints and discusses these prints once a month for their whole school year. So far, we're on our fourth year, so I'm doing the fourth graders that I originally did as kindergarten. and it's been enormously successful. We've been very happy with the results. The kids are phenomenal. They very much love the idea of discussing art and being successful at doing so. So this has led us to offer teacher or parent workshops within the other schools, and we will go into the schools and work with their prints and their volunteers and train them in this particular inquiry-based method that we use. I'm also teaching with what used to be called Jill and is now called Ossie, I believe. And that is, of course, for adults on learning how to see. I've been a consultant with the Smithsonian American Art Museum in their furniture department, and I'm also contacting NEH to work with their new fabulous print program, which schools are getting free. Thank you.
I'm Teresa Owen, and I work at Second Street Gallery. I'm the outreach and communications coordinator there, and Second Street is a nonprofit art gallery downtown. We offer a variety of outreach programs. A couple, for example, we go into the Boys and Girls Club and bring artists to conduct art workshops for the kids. We go to local schools and have exhibiting artists at Second Street who are sometimes nationally known conduct these workshops for kids. And over the next few years, we're trying to expand our outreach program. So I'm interested in hearing about different perspectives of art in the community.
I'm Rebecca Schoenthal. I'm the director at Second Street Gallery. It's my fourth day on the job. So I came to find out what's going on around town. As Teresa said, something I'm very interested in doing is expanding the outreach program. So we're trying to make more connections and think about ways that our organization can collaborate and also work with people. Yeah.
I have slightly more experience on the job, but not much. My name is Amy Hunt. I'm a clay artist. For 4 years, I was the director of the Art Center in Orange. And this year, I took a job managing the summer arts program at the UVA Art Museum, which is a camp program, an art camp program for kids rising 4th through 12th graders. We had 85 students in that program this year. And then when that was over, they offered me the job of interim education coordinator at the museum. So I've been there about a month. And I'm new to the field of like academic arts administration. My experience is more community-based, so that's a new experience.
I'm Greg Kelly. I'm the managing director of the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative, which is a startup nonprofit arts organization in the neighborhood of Belmont, just off downtown Charlottesville. We are also members of Piedmont Council of the Arts, and our mission is twofold. We support local and emerging artists and also actively work to dissolve social barriers through collaborative programs and partnerships throughout the city. So that's the big part of what I'm here for, is to learn more about what each of you do, but also try to link up a bit more. Thus far, the Bridge has been actively engaged in workshops in the community of West Haven with Harold and the kids there. We just started working with Gloria and groups in Southwood, but we are constantly looking to expand that element of what we do overall.
I'm Bree Luck, and I am the Director of Outreach at Lighthouse Studio. It's a media education center for middle school and high school students. And right now we are working on sort of the two different ends of the spectrum of what we do. We're starting up workshops at West Art. We have a Keep It Real workshop, which is sort of a video diary workshop, and we're doing it at West Haven, Friendship Court, and Southwood. And then we're also getting students, hand-selecting students from different art classes around the city for a video as a fine art filmmaking class. So we're sort of, and we do everything in between. Well, we're working with it. And we've had a number of different collaborations with many organizations in this room, and look forward to more. And we are members of PC. And then I'm also here, I wear another hat too, and that is as director of the Voice Project, which is an educational theater program at Flubana Women's Prison. And so I'm also looking forward to finding out ways to expand that to other incarcerated folks in the area.
Thank you, everybody. I'm also going to take the liberty to introduce the other second row folks back here. In addition to Jean Wilhelm, who you've already met, Tom Kogel, Margot Smith, and Lang Murray are three of the most active PCA board members out there. And I'll let you all introduce yourselves and tell where you're from. And then I want to move on to Ellie over there after you're finished.
Tom Kogel. I've been on the PCA board for a little over 3 years. And I'm a freelance photographer. Probably my only connection to arts and education in the area is that I've done a series of exhibits on the projects of nonprofit organizations in Central America. Done three exhibits over the last 4 years. Just for public education as to what those nonprofits do.
I'm Margot Smith, and I'm a member of PCA board and also the director and curator of Klipiru Australian Aboriginal Art Collection at UVA. And we are members of PCA and also offer free guided tours to groups, to schools, and to any interest group on by appointment, and a free guided tour every Saturday at 10:30.
I'm Lang Murray, and I came to PCA. I've been working for about 9 years and came through education. My educational interests, I have 5 children, and I did the programming in all their schools as they came along, and they finally got out of school, so I came to PCA, and I'm still trying to do that.
Fight tooth and nail to keep her for as long as you can. And Ellie Frazier is our wonderful UIP intern from the University of Virginia this year. She is a studio art major and potentially a double major. Are you a double major? What's your other major?
Anthropology.
Anthropology.
Minor in art history.
And she's serving as our programs coordinator for the year and has just done an amazing job of essentially morphing herself into a PCA staff member without the funding for a salary. So she's quite indispensable to us. But I'm going to jump right into the questions because that's really the meat of the conversation. And the way Kate and I had kind of designed this was that I would facilitate and she would help us take some notes. And if that works, then we'll try it. But I actually want to be as much of a backseat facilitator as possible and let you all, as I mentioned, sort of drive the conversation and take it where you think it's most important to go. I also want to thank, in addition to Harvest Moon Catering, who provided this amazing spread to us, I want to thank the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and Sean Tubbs, who is helping us record this conversation, which we'll post on our website if everyone is okay with it. If anyone does not want that to happen, just let us know. But we do think that the more people that can engage in the ideas that we're discussing today, the better. And particularly when we go and take some of the fruits of our labor here to community leaders, we want to be able to give them sound bites and quotes and help them understand what we talked about today.
Okay, would you just say that there's more food?
There's more food. Thanks goodness.
Remarkably.
So who has a question or on this sheet or otherwise that you'd like to pose to the group to start?
I think that third question is a really good one, considering we're all here to talk about arts education.
Trying to
make
this question?
Yeah, just finding out ideas.
Okay, what are the strengths and weaknesses of our community in terms of arts education?
There's a lot of arts organizations in this community.
I don't know if any of you are familiar with the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. It's kind of a harsh word, but it's a helpful way to begin to sort of organize your thoughts. And I had considered doing this as a closer, but since the question was picked to start, I think we could turn this into a little SWOT analysis of our own. We'll put strengths here, weaknesses here, and I put opportunities and concerns. So this is a SWOT analysis. But this will help us
you can think about it in terms of present, future, positive, negative. We're looking at things today that are helping us or not making us as strong, and then we're looking at things in the future that could change both of those. So we're kind of, that's, we call it challenges.
Or concerns, either one.
Same thing, though. Future-oriented, though. So Greg mentioned the number of arts organizations providing education programs. We just had a wonderful illustration of the intros as a strength. I would also say, after having just connected with a lot of the leaders in the city and county school systems, that the public schools are very receptive and tuned in to education, and they prioritize it. The principals seem to prioritize it. So in terms of a broader scale view of arts education, we have at the root, at the beginning of our citizens' lives, a strong commitment to the arts and education in the school system.
I think you should add to that that the independent schools, our independent school groups have really pretty strong arts education programs occurring in them, too.
I think in looking at that, looking at the opportunities that are there through the groups, high number of arts organizations, and being somebody that just stepped into the role of coordinator for fine arts, there's a lot of things that are going on. And PCA's done a whole lot to help organize that information through the catalog we created this year, but still, I think that's one area to be able to look at that systematically and see it organized in some way. To know, so when schools look at it, it's easier to pick according to school schedules as to what they can participate in.
So you're saying we already have kind of the seed of a nice way to organize all of this, but we could take it further, make it broader, make it easier to use.
So the principals have, you know, more of an access to looking at it. I have 26 schools that I try to coordinate across the county with opportunities and have different opportunities coming in, but they're not always aware of what that looks like in the big picture. So I think sometimes things go into the schools and get missed because of just the flow of information and the timing.
And I'm also going to interject that I hope we can look at both educating young people in our community and also educating citizens at large. The oldest citizen in the community really is someone that we're also talking about today. So that's looking at how you get information out to school systems. What about for the rest of community members? How are we doing in terms of arts education or arts learning opportunities for everyone else?
I think one of the weaknesses in this community is accessibility. A lot of young people, a lot of older people have a hard time getting to programs, and sometimes they can get there, but there's no transportation to get them home, and so that's a barrier to them coming at all. And I think this is something that I'm hearing from a lot of the people that I work with, that it's becoming more and more a problem for kids, especially, to get around the non-driving community and the older community, the non-driving older community.
On that note, Gloria and I have been working, just started working in Southwood with a photography workshop this summer. We tried to bring the same kids to the space, to the bridge, and we had a lot of difficulty with that. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot more success, obviously, going to their community, to their, on their turf, so to speak. So that's been a really effective strategy for increasing numbers and accessibility.
I also heard more than a few organizations talk about making people aware of their scholarship opportunities or other ways of letting kids who wouldn't otherwise be able to be part of something get that opportunity. And my children, I'm a low-income single parent, and both of my children have had opportunities to be at Sally Hart's wonderful Albemarle Ballet Theater on scholarship for 3 years, which was an incredible educational opportunity. And my other daughter went to the one that you're now the head of, the UVA summer camp. Mm-hmm. And because, just to put it bluntly, I'm an educated, resourceful woman, I became aware of these opportunities. And I wonder what ways that people who might not be thinking about how to leverage resources for their low-income children might have start to recognize what's out there. And sometimes guides or other ways that you organize the information might be a little more off-putting than, say, a testimonial or some other creative way of reaching those people.
Two community organizations, the public libraries, the system here, and the City Parks and Rec, both have tremendous resources of fairly low-priced arts classes and arts opportunities. The public library things are all free, but the Parks and Recreation has very low prices on their arts classes, dance, music, art, other things. So those are, I really think, are strength to the kinds of people you're talking about.
Speaking of strengths, I'm just sitting on the Youth Development Network board, and a lot of the things that have to do with getting information out to youth as far as our program are available there. The idea is, they sit in the room with someone like this and talk about the same thing, how to consolidate information and get it out to the youth community. I think that anyone who's involved with youth and arts in this community should pay attention to that and check out their website and
figure
it out.
Do you know?
Youth Development Network is through CCF. Another thing, too, as far as a big issue this past year that we talked about there is the transportation issue, and it's been major for everyone. We had a speaker from Jean come out recently, and I'm not sure how many people know about Jean or what it is. But it's a local busing service, kind of. We kind of call them up, say, pick me up here. It's like a safe taxi service. They've got the big buses, and they've overhauled themselves recently, and it's really inexpensive, and they're rarely available, especially for any kids from Southwood out to the bridge or doing things like that. And I think that's a big opportunity for people to get a strong service from those things.
Recently, Charlottesville and Albemarle have become kind of a retirement mecca nationwide. People are coming here and retiring, and a lot of these folks have lots of practical and professional experience and background in the arts, and finding a way to tap some of these folks who've got the energy and the interest and get them into the schools, I think would be a great opportunity for us if we could find a way to focus on that and use them as a resource.
What kinds of ways could we use MECU? Does anyone have ideas? That it's not the first time I've heard that, and I've often wondered, well, how do we implement something like that? Is that an organization-to-organization kind of partnership? Is it a marketing campaign?
You know, they tend to focus on some of the retirement communities. If there was some way to get somebody in the community to put up a resource board of folks that would be interested in going out of. Years ago, I tapped into some folks that I used in the jazz band program out at Western Albemarle. These were some retired musicians that, you know, just loved the opportunity to be able to come in and work with the kids. And so, you know, the big problem is finding where they're at and making those connections. You know, this might be the thing where the folks at the retirement center could connect with Andy or with Jeff with lists of people that they would have available.
I think that kind of speaks to what I think one of the challenges probably is for a lot of us being nonprofits or public school systems is funding and volunteers. We rely so heavily on volunteers and how to get access to volunteer resources.
Can I just interject that the university has a huge volunteer base, and if you're interested in getting students to volunteer for your program, please get in contact with me. I actually have class, so I have to run, but thank you all very much, and don't hesitate to get in contact with me.
And Jenny Smith. My name is
Jenny Smith, sorry. Jenny Smith. My email address is on the list. I'm the representative from the UVA Student Council.
Thanks. And if I can expand on the funding, it's over there under weakness, and to me it's more of a challenge because what's starting to happen right now, as everyone probably already knows, the media is just blowing it in a huge exaggerated proportion, but there are funding issues that are eventually, I think, going to affect us. And the Virginia Commission for the Arts is already talking about some of the holdback and cutbacks on the funding that they're going to be having next year. And
with so many groups and individuals competing for the same dollars, with those external changes occurring, it's going to put quite a squeeze on our community, on our arts community. And I think the arts community, knowing that, unlike our government that knew so much, needs to posture themselves now to respond to that and start to think about ways to work collaboratively, because collaborative dollars can go a lot further. And I have noticed in this community there's been a lot more collaboration in the last 4 years since I've been here. It's growing, but I don't think it's enough yet. I think there are still a lot of groups that are very compartmentalized in their work, and it would really be a productive thing for us to work together.
How can we foster collaboration like that? I mean, do meetings like this really make collaboration happen, or do we have to go a few steps down the road? Not necessarily PCA, but the arts community.
I think this is a great start. I mean, getting people together in a room to think tank, to brainstorm. One of the biggest train wrecks that seems to occur in this community is simply one of the calendar. If you look at the PCA calendar, on any one day, if just an unaware person says, well, what am I going to do today? And they go to that thing, there's a lot going on. If some of those things could be consolidated, you know, over the long term, then it might offer a wider variety of very enriching programming that's not just focused on one particular medium or one particular social aspect, but incorporating a whole bunch of them at once.
And to clarify, you're saying actually consolidating the events.
I think consolidating events, because that's directly related a lot of times to funding. If you can combine your marketing budgets, if you can combine your capacity to pull something off, combine your talents and everything, you can have a much more broad-reaching event. And when I say event, I don't mean a one-time thing. It could be a course. It could be a six-week course of some sort, where you're partnering up and using the talents of the community to make that happen. And you know, the credit for that event and the resources are spread out over several different groups.
I see that connecting with the point I was trying to make earlier, and coordinating those efforts and trying to make it stronger and more collaborative, so that we don't have a lot of different things going on out there. That really a lot of those events target the same kind of performance or something like mm-hmm. that. Whereas if it was more approached more systematically, we might be able to target different groups of people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you're pulling in a collaborative group of organizers, you're obviously going to pull in a collaborative group of attendees and guests for that too. And the other thing I think that's coming to mind to me as we look at the collaborating is just the fact that the funding, I mean, the funding aspect of all of this is, to me, impetus enough, because one of the most tragic things for me is to have someone come to me with a really incredible program that they want to get going in this community and only have it, you know, completely fall short because they've not been able to pull all those pieces together. And it could have been a very valuable, wonderful experience. So,
I don't know if this is a weakness or a challenge, but part of getting that collaboration happening, when so many events are cast forward into the future, it's a matter of timing.
Yes.
If you're looking at something that's next year and great exhibits coming into town and people are planning dance performances or music or openings around that, getting ahead of the curve so that your collaboration has the effectiveness that you want is a real issue.
That is a big one. I agree. Nobody plans far enough ahead.
How many people in this room have space for workshops or educational programs as a part of their organization? That's what I'd be interested in, like a physical space.
So that's about 60%, 70%?
Because that's a huge resource. I mean, if you are able to give access or grant access, even if it's not in your programming.
And there are smaller ways that happens. For example, I was just talking to someone from Inside Out, is an arts group that provides visual arts education in prisons and jails in the area. And they had a meeting last night, and they were saying, where can I get a projector? And I know there is an organization around town that has a projector that loans it out to nonprofits for free. I can't remember which one it is, but I think the Center for Nonprofit Excellence listed on their website. But little things like that, not just space, but a projector or volunteers to work the door, materials, extra materials, ways to share and make that information available to people seems like a real opportunity.
Yeah.
A challenge for those of us who work with the public school system is the content of the curriculum. Whether it's dictated by No Child Left Behind or statewide SLL standards, the curriculum often determines what arts programs public schools are able to participate in with outside groups. Like, for example, in the high schools, you know, every sophomore has to see Macbeth. And so that's the show we have to put on that year. You know, we have to put on Macbeth because every high school has to see it. We would love to have more artistic freedom to be able to have high schools and elementary schools see the stuff that we think is best from an artistic standpoint. We're willing to make some compromises with the state and the feds on their curricula, but it would be wonderful if the arts community had some input into those curricula instead of just having to get it, you know, given to us and then we have to adapt to what's on there.
Is that a challenge or an opportunity? This is not
going to
happen.
Well, I mean, maybe at the federal level it's not going to happen, but why not at the state level?
Funding.
Well, and I think it's not just funding, it's the departments that do that kind of thing. They've been cut back, they've been consolidated, and it's hard to find the right, you know, entity to really work with, I think, a lot of times at that level.
Also, you're touching on a big thing here.
Yeah.
It's not just what you're saying, and I agree with you 100%, but just to bring arts programs into the schools anymore is getting more and more difficult. Yeah. Principals are just saying, enough is enough. I can't take anymore. I want it, but I can't with SOLs and No Child Left Behind. It's really, you know, I have to hold back, and I don't want to hold back. I just want to give everything that we could possibly get for the schools. So if you can do Macbeth, that's good. You know, I understand your problem, but at least they can actually see it live. And but boy, I'll tell you, that's a big problem.
Well,
that's
maybe an opportunity there is that I know when the 1 year that my daughter spent at a public school at B.L. Murray in Albemarle County, there were some after-school classes that were offered. They were for-pay classes, so someone might have been offering whatever, pottery. But if some of the arts organizations have the funding to provide a performance opportunity or an arts experience opportunity, but rather than charging the students or interfering with the SOLs during the school day, perhaps might be able to offer more opportunities in the schools after the school day, that probably get a lot of kids signing up.
Well, we also have to convince people that we're not interrupting education. You know, that we are very much part of it. We have SOLs, and we support the SOLs, and in a better way than a lot of the other ways that they do it, you know, in education. I can't think of a better way to learn something than through seeing it in a play or hearing it, you know, and doing it. And so that's part of the thing, too, is just making sure. You know, I do believe the Charlottesville City Schools have a mindset that puts this on, you know, as part of the equal educational pie, and I think that's something that we have to keep pressing.
I want to I was going to mention this in the intro and I cut it because of time, but because it seems relevant, I want to bring up a couple things that PCA is doing in regards to these issues. One, we just started a publication. There are a few of them around. I don't have one for everyone, but it's Community Arts Education Handbook, and most of you who provide arts education programs are in here. But this is a pilot version of this guide. We want to do it every year, and we want everyone to be in here over time. It's primarily web-based. We have a PDF version of this in color because printing is so expensive. But what PCA is going to do every year is get all the information about programs that are available to school groups, and many of which are free and low cost, and compile it into this guide. And that's the first step. I mean, we all know that guides can come out the wazoo, and whether or not people are going to have the time, money, or attention to take advantage of the opportunities is a completely different issue. So the second component of what PCA has been doing is to actually go in and make face-to-face contact with principals and other school leaders. This year, I sat down with all the principals in the Charlottesville City Schools and just very briefly, in 10 minutes, told them a little bit about all the opportunities that are in this guide and will continue to be in this guide, and also said, if you have another question that's not going to be covered in a listing, how you can incorporate arts into your school, challenges that you're having, pick up the phone and call PCA, and we'll sort of be your researcher, your problem solver, your networker. So positioning what is a pretty small and low capacity organization as
a point person between the arts community and the schools, so that over time, when there are questions, someone knows who to go to, and that's both sides, not just schools to the arts community, but the arts community to schools. And sure enough, within a week of that conversation, I had two principals contact me directly with specific questions, one of whom wanted to know how they could sign up for programs with Paramount if they were having trouble figuring it out on the website. Another principal wanted to know how to get some arts teaching in his after-school program, which he had tons of funding for, but nothing left over to bring an arts teacher in. And Jenny, who was just here, who runs the Student Arts Council at UVA, happened to have a whole group of students, art students, who want to educate in public schools. So we connected that principal up with Jenny, who's going to be providing arts educators to the after-school program free of charge. So little things like that, which aren't mastermind big projects, but over time could help close some of the gaps. And I don't think we'll be able to come up with some system-wide solutions in the short term, but at least on a case-by-case basis, we can solve small problems and better understand what the trends are.
Under challenges, I would always include disadvantaged, and in Charlottesville, there's a tremendous foreign population, and it's a bright and beautiful population. We have over 50 languages spoken in Charlottesville High School. I mean, it's just amazing, and so that's something that we should see as a challenge and explore more. And, of course, reaching kids who just don't have these opportunities. But it's not just giving them the opportunities, it's making them want it. You know, and that's how we have to reach them first, because some of them don't even know they're missing it. And so that is certainly something we try to do in the schools, but we can use all the help we can get.
Yeah, if you're worried about reaching those kids, can you do more in their community, say, and use the school as a base? You know, have a fair, an arts fair or something there, rather than have them to have to come to Paramount or into Charlottesville. This way you can get their parents, and you can do it on a weekend or perhaps sometime when more people are available.
Any family-oriented things are always great, especially if they're doing something together.
Right, right. Activities.
It occurs to me that PCA is an umbrella organization. Many of us, I was on the board for 10 years, so I'm pretty familiar with it, believe in it strongly. We're an umbrella organization for the arts community. One of the things that seems to me potentially a challenge is that being an outsider from somewhere else for most of my life and arriving here, as I said before, only in 1994, seemed to me that the arts as a community are not always central to the rest of our population's agendas and thoughts and thinkings. That unlike some of the places where I've lived, the arts are a little, as a group, are a little more disconnected from the things that sort of quote-unquote really matter. And I don't know if that's true. I've had a feeling that is true at the University of Virginia. Whether it's true in the community to the same extent, I don't know. There are two other organizations that I wonder if we might collectively think of creating some kind of a frequently common cause or some kind of a connection. One is the relatively new CNE, the Center for Nonprofit Excellence, and the other is our Community Foundation. Both of them are excellent institutions, I believe. I know a little bit about both of them. I think it may be fair to say in neither of them is the arts dead center to what they do and how they think about their role in our community. And I'm wondering if there might be some way for this umbrella organization to make fit more of a cause with those two other umbrella organizations that would therefore benefit the entire community, us, and everyone else involved. Thinking kind of broadly here.
I have two things. First of all, the Artisan Center of Virginia is in the process of following through on their campaign to build the studio school. So if anyone here is interested in the space issue, we're going to start setting up some times to get together to talk about what that space needs to look at. Now, there's already a basic concept on the floor that it's going to have a dirty room and a clean room because of the nature of the type of classes that artisans would hold. but they're looking at it being kind of a multi-use facility as well, something that would be an asset to the community. So,
and where is it located?
We're right now looking at the Ix building, which is just over on the other side of Garrett Square. So, but there's still a lot to go. We're in the infant stages of this right now. It's not even really a public, publicly announced initiative, but we're engaging it on October 15th. So please call me and we'll set up times to talk and show you what the plans, what the blueprints are starting to look like. But then secondly, talking about the Community Foundation and CNE, one of the things that I think the arts struggle with across the board is making a case for themselves, a strong case for themselves. You know, education being a very strong case for the arts and enrichment and something very important to people's lives. The economic case, though, is one that I keep coming to with all these funding challenges, and I think one of the connections that we haven't been able to really articulate well in the arts community is how what we do really creates an economic base in our community. And if we can start to do that with children, I mean, it's all about raising children to be productive people in our community. If we can make the connection to how important the arts is to doing that, and we can connect the dots to it having an economic impact, then I think we can get a lot more leverage with some of the outside organizations that don't necessarily put us high on their priorities of servicing. You know, there are so many health issues and social issues and other, you know, issues on the table right now that the arts does often kind of fall into here, and it doesn't need to. I think it's very connected to overall health and well-being in our community.
I want to let you speak, and then I'm going to pause and ask a question about the rest of the agenda. So.
I work with the Latino population, and a lot of the Latinos within Charlottesville are very low socioeconomic level. The more I work with them, the more I feel like if we look at the band of low socioeconomic individuals that fall into that category, no matter if they're Latino, non-Latino, I mean, they could be of any color. The issues are all the same. The issues are survival. So when you're trying to say, how am I going to get this child enthusiastic about art, I mean, it's a difficult sell. But I go back to the issue of teaching parents to be advocates for their children's education. So if we focus on looking at how do we make parents understand the value of creativity, the value of critical thinking, the value of all of these components that are so important to a human being, that the schools are slowly putting in a different location. I'm not saying that they're deleting it from the whole educational process, but not everyone has an equal opportunity because of the low socioeconomic level and because of the tracking situation. And they're just systemic issues that are just the way they are. I mean, there's nothing we can do about them. So the issue is, what can we as an institution do to help these parents? So I've started what I'm calling a parent academy to help parents who are just getting their kids into the school system, kindergarten, Bright Stars, Head Start, and teaching them, okay, this is how the school works. This is how you can become an advocate. This is how you can. So because I'm so into the arts, I mean, I'm encouraging all of the kids I encounter to take classes that we're offering with the Bridge and the Boys and Girls Club. But the more programs that are out there, the more I can give that information out. And I think I'm just one person, but I'm assuming there are a lot of people within the system who can give that information out. And it is just going to be a process. But I really believe it's educating the parents of the value, because the kids really don't know. So right now I'm just pushing the kids. But, you know, the adolescents that we have in the class, they're middle school and low high school, like 9th and 10th graders, because I want them to be able to come back the following years. But it's pushing. But once they're there, they get enthusiastic. But, you know, but the smaller kids, you just have to get their parents involved.
We did something in the Charlottesville schools that was incredible called Celebrate Diversity, mm-hmm. and it was all done through the arts. And we had dances and costumes and artwork that were all on stage. And whereas these kids, the whole thing was called This Is My Story, and these kids who were in the background and scared of coming out became the stars.
Wow.
And it was really neat. We're going to continue that this year, but that was one of the most successful, brightest programs that we've had, and it was all so diverse and so colorful. That's a great way to...
What age, Jeff?
This was high school.
This was wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And, really, we had African drummers and all kinds, from many different countries.
I'm going to just pause really quickly, and I'm going to run through a couple of the words that keep coming up. We've got collaboration, consolidation, funding, transportation, access, information, prioritization of arts, families and parents, low-income challenges. Those are some of the things that keep coming up. At this point, we have about 40 minutes, maybe not even, 30 to 40 minutes left of our time. And I want to ask if you'd like to break up into smaller groups to take some of these maybe groups of words or groups of issues that we're finding ourselves returning to and looking at a little deeper and splitting it up so that we can get more done in a shorter period of time. I also really like the collaborative exchange across the table, so if you don't want to do that, I totally understand. We can continue just talking for the rest of the time. You want to take a vote? Raise your hand if you'd like to break up into small groups.
Two.
Raise your hand if you'd like to keep talking as a whole. One, two, three, four. Okay, we're going to keep talking as a whole. But one thing that we can do as we, we'll change the agenda a little bit and think about finding some of these subtopics and making some sense of it, synthesizing a lot of the information that's just been thrown out, and maybe we can set up future meetings for small groups of us to look at some of them, over a brown bag lunch, we meet at Effie's one day, or something very casual, so that we can take it a little bit further, but we don't have to use the time today to do so. You were going to say something.
I think one of my big roles as a coordinator is to look at development of curriculum. The state provides SOLs, but basically if you look at those SOLs for the arts, they're just skills. It doesn't get into the concepts. It doesn't get into what the discipline of the arts is. And so I think the challenge there is to show it the same as any other discipline, as we would show mathematics, as we would show language arts, and to say that the value of the arts is what is... what develops in that experience of education through a child learning about the arts and through the practice and acquiring the skills in order to do that. I cringe when I go to meetings where people, I think, well-meaningly try to support the arts by saying things like citing research, which is really not all that strong anyway, or saying the kids that are involved in the arts or are learning music improve mathematical test scores. That, to me, it totally devalues the arts itself as a discipline and is saying the value of the arts rests in a child's ability to be able to perform in some other area. There's a really good book called Studio Thinking. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that book. It's just come out. It was part of the Zero Project with Harvard. And it makes those points pretty clearly in there. That the things that are developed through that study of arts in the curriculum through it as a discipline and the practice of learning the skills involved with arts and problem solving and critical thinking that involves are exactly the same kinds of things that you look at through well-developed curriculum in any of the disciplines. So I think that's the direction it needs to go in rather than looking at the arts as,
I have a question
fun things to do.
To pose as an extension of that comment, and that's something that was brought to my attention by John Gibson, director of Live Arts. I was telling him a little bit about this gathering. And he said, well, don't ask all the, expected questions, which, of course, we've asked. But he said, ask the unexpected questions, like, how do people learn today? And how do people receive arts and culture today in their everyday life? And I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about that, because I think it's related to what you're saying, and that's that we don't compartmentalize the arts, but we think about the arts and learning is part of the way citizens learn as they go through their daily lives and experience creativity. What do you think are the ways that we do learn today, or the most traction-oriented ways that we receive information today?
Television. And I know working with kids, like, that's where they're getting their music from. There's a visual component to music nowadays, just like there's a musical component to visual nowadays, especially with the youth community. At the Music Resource Center, one of the big challenges that we have had is to try and teach music skills and engineering, skills to kids who are more concerned about looking like what they see on television. What we've done is kind of reverse the process, where in the past, you were to take a music program in school, or even like a band class or something like that. You might, you know, play the Michigan fight song and then some classical music. And a lot of kids will drop out of band because they're like, I don't want to do that. That's not the kind of music I want to play. Now we actually teach them what they want to learn and reverse the process until we're getting to the education process of it. Okay, here, this is how you produce 50 Cent song. Okay, now let's talk about the technical aspect of that, the musical aspect of that, until we can get to the deeper part of the learning, where they're like, oh, that's actually pretty cool, you know? But they learned what they wanted to learn, and that's what the kids are really gravitating towards now. I mean, we work with a lot of high-risk kids at the Music Resource Center, and that's how we get through to them. I teach a class that's, you know, critically analyzing hip-hop lyrics, you know, using English tools like, you know, literary allusions and similes and metaphors, but I'm taking songs off the radio. And then we take those, we teach those terms to the kids, and then we say, okay, now let's look at what you're reading in your English book. Now you know what those terms mean for real, because they mean something to you. All right, and we're teaching them that way. And just from the youth aspect, that's how we're trying to connect to them, and I think that's the way we're really seeing a success rate out there.
I think another tool to piggyback on him, the internet. You know, a lot of kids, when we go, we have a computer lab at West Haven, and when we go there, the first thing the kids go into is YouTube, and they go to the videos, or they go to certain sites that, you know, is music-wise, but, you know, some of them go to, like, maybe a game site or something, but they gravitate to YouTube, where they can see the videos, learn the lyrics, and, like, you know, like, imagine themselves producing a video. But the internet is, like, so big, so wide now. You know, so a lot of kids in my neighborhood, which is a low-income neighborhood, loves YouTube.
I'd just like to add one more thing to that. It's a big difference, too. I mean, I'm only 30, but we didn't really have, you know, the internet such in that fashion, you know, when I was in high school and middle school. So my parents had more control over what I was getting access to. Kids nowadays have the choice to say, screw you, because I can get what I want. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a big deal. They can just look at you and be like, I don't care, because I don't have to care, because I can leave here, go home, and I'll get fed exactly what I want. And that's why we've had to reverse the process, because we have to say, okay, and I know this is kind of in a more conservative method of teaching, doesn't necessarily agree with this, like giving the kids what they want, but that's why we have to give them what they want. We have to give them a piece of candy, you know, and then they're going to get it anyway. So you give them a piece of candy and say, okay, here, or like, you know, it's like putting sugar on toast, you know, but at least you're getting bread, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what we're doing here. I think that's a really good way to.
Well, it's meeting them where they are.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's when I see ways of learning, like that heading on something. I mean, there are two schools of thought here. We're talking about the vehicles, the ways to get the information to the kids, but it's also the way the children learn. And I think being very respectful to the different ways that children learn is something that we always have to, you know, be mindful of incorporating in any of the activities we do. Whether it's visual, audio, whatever, you know, type learning style, or wherever they may be in terms of their knowledge about a certain field, whether it's music, spatial arts, those type of things. And the tools that we use, see, I see the TV and the internet and all the things on the internet as the tools to actually, you know, unlocking those moments with those children. You know, so to me, it's much more broader. I think we have to use text messaging. You know, I think we have to use these kinds of things to reach kids. If we had an art campaign and we had emails or phone numbers of these children, we could text them all, you know, subliminal messages. What would that do? I don't know, but that's what reaches them. So if we stay behind the times and we try to keep everything in the textbook, then we're not going to reach them.
What's interesting about this, and I'll just say it briefly, that actually something that's happening in all four of these categories is strength, it's a weakness, it's an opportunity, and it's a threat. Because the strength of it is that these kids are, you know, actively engaged in this vehicle for information exchange. You know, they're going to YouTube, they're watching TV, they're going to MySpace, so there's a real captive audience there. The weakness is, as of yet, it's not necessarily connected to what we do in the arts in our community, but it could be, so it's an opportunity, as the music resource has figured out and acted upon. But I think that there are also some threats or some challenges to using that kind of technology, particularly when we know that there's expenses involved, that it's widely accessible to anyone, and there are a lot of aspects of it are collaborative on the web, and you don't have as much control over what you do and how it's perceived and responded to. But I just wanted to kind of point out that that's something that's really hitting all of these areas.
That's kind of where we are in the development of technology and destruction and everything else. And what you were talking about with all those different ways of providing opportunities for children, when you develop curriculum, you think of that as differentiation, is taking the content of what you're teaching, the processes the kids get there to learn about that, and the products that they create are all kind of designed to fit the things that they are, you know, naturally talented to do and interested in doing. But then also you have to balance that with things that same child would be challenged to do it so that they can have the opportunities to have new experiences, because if they're always going to stay in that world in which they're able to be talented and perform very well, they're not going to be able to develop the areas in which they might be challenged. So it's good to have a balance of those kinds of opportunities there and look at it. When I think about how the arts really kind of connect with that, I think of design and production as the two main areas, because the whole design process is problem solving. One of the goals in Albemarle County is, you know, to have kids be able to work and be successful in a global economy. And in order to do that in a global economy, they have to be able to use all these tools. So when I was a curriculum technology integration partner in the classroom, one of the first things I learned was that if I wanted a classroom to adopt technology, I wouldn't go in and train the teacher to use the technology necessarily. I'd pick up on a couple of kids and work with a small group of kids, so that when the teacher started doing it, she knew that there would be experts in the room. Because you can have second grade experts in how to use technology, and they'll sit down with the way they think these days and figure it out. So if the teacher gets stumped, she knows there's somebody there in the room if she doesn't have an outside technology person there. And she doesn't feel as threatened by it. And the other thing is once those kids get a taste for that, they're not going to let it. They're not going to let the computer sit there and not be used. I mean, they're going to go looking for stuff, using it for research, trying to find things they can help the teacher with to incorporate it. So I see that as really kind of a plus, that the way the kids are using technology. The problem that I see right now is that when I was in elementary school, you only read about computers and science fiction books, and it would take a computer the size of this whole building in order to do not a fraction of what a little MacBook could do these days. The internet was unheard of. There wasn't anybody doing anything on the internet. So we're in a state of flux, trying to adjust past traditions and processes that have been set up in the past to try to get ready for this new group of people that's coming in the future. And from looking back where it was when I was a kid, God only knows where it's going to go.
But in the same breath too, we cannot forget where we come from. History and arts, I think that's a way when kids just forget about the arts, because they don't know the history maybe of an artist or maybe of a painter or maybe of a photographer. Kids, if they know the history of that particular art that they want to be involved with, I think they'll latch on a little bit easier. you go to a child now and ask them, you know, who was Vanguard or something, they don't know who they are. I mean, who he is, because they don't know the history. I think that's what we so far up here, but we're not right here teaching them the history of what, you know what I'm saying, what is art.
So if you approach it as a discipline, that's part of it. That's the history of the discipline is an important aspect of what they would be learning about. But I agree with that. We teach mathematics. There's nothing about the history of mathematics mm-hmm. in the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And the history of mathematics is so rich.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I think with arts versus things like mathematics and science, sometimes in arts education, I think we have this attitude like, we're the red-headed stepchild. You know, all what Americans really need is science and math. And if there's time, we'll put in some arts. It's a nice frill. It's a nice little thing to make you a little more civilized. But I wish I could remember his name, but there's a really well-known business writer these days.
The Whole New Mind.
Yeah, Whole New Mind. Right. So his thesis. His thesis is that if you talk about ways of learning, a lot of the ways of teaching that we have in our schools today are suited for an industrial economy that no longer exists. They're suited to create kids to work at General Motors on an assembly line. But those jobs aren't there in America anymore. They're in China or India where they're being done by machines. And so what Daniel Pink says is Americans, to have a competitive advantage, we need to train our kids in a different way, not to follow orders and be somewhere on time. We need to train them to think creatively. That's what America is going to do in the world economy. And so it's the arts that should be in the center of the education and not on the outside.
Well, the thing that is missing from that list is physical engagement mm-hmm. and process. I mean, right. I think that...
this is the strength?
Just the ways we learn. Yeah. I mean, we said internet, television. We're talking about technology, but we're not talking about biology or kinesthetic, like, you know, movement, theater, dance. All of these things are... that's the fundamental way that I learn. I mean, I learn by doing something. And I think that that's something that's hugely overlooked because of the presence and prominence of the internet, of television, of technology. And that when you get kids into a room and you share an experience that, or just people, I mean, it's not kids, it's just...
Yeah, that was my question. How do you take this and expand it to... the community at large, adults, and how we learn.
Oh, I'm expanding, not answering your question, yeah. unfortunately. Yeah. But just to give an example, I think that it's not just collaborativeness to the schools, but also just within the classroom. I'm a former public school teacher myself, and I can remember my arts is drama and theater. So my kids really got everything integrated into the curriculum that I taught, had a dramatic, theatrical bent. I read a lot of role playing and other things that added to them being excited about the curriculum, whether it was a science lesson plan that I was teaching. But the one thing I did tell them, and I apologize at the top of the school year, was I know nothing about the visual arts. So, and there was no arts teacher that came into the classroom, and I ended up having to teach them. So I immediately apologized to them at the beginning of the year because they're only going to get stick people for me. And they said, no worries, we'll come up with something. And so we spent the whole year, the kids almost came up with the lesson plans, and let's do this. And it was the most exciting year as far as that's concerned. It was about all of us in the classroom collaborating together, and we created our own sort of arts projects together. So it's that sort of thing that you can add to the curriculum.
One of the things that I like to think about is the movement from the use of the word arts to creativity, because we're kind of getting into that realm as we talk about problem solving and the way we learn and experience the world. And that's one of the reasons why we were calling these creative conversations. But I'd like to help the whole community understand how people from the arts sector really do help our community, our citizens, engage in the world in more creative ways. We're learning more, we're experiencing it more closely and more directly because we have the arts as a vehicle through which we interact with each other and learn new things. And I think that really, when you're talking about standing up in front of city council and making arguments for why you need more funding or why schools need to prioritize the arts more, whatever the argument is, if you can take it out of the realm, and we all know that the arts for art's sake is an argument that is not going to be denied in this room, but being able even more to step beyond, you know, the history of the arts and the value of the arts for itself and take it into the way all community members are living in the Charlottesville area, I think is going to be a really powerful argument for the arts sector to be able to make.
Yeah. I think social capital is like at the core of it. I just feel like the arts are one of the key things that bring people into group situations. That, as far as entertainment and joy and creativity, and that you're doing something that's not just a business meeting or a seminar, but that's just going off that.
I think one of the strengths of our arts community is that we have so many free opportunities to experience the arts. Whether it's First Fridays, Fridays After Five, Pay What You Can nights at theaters, there's so many different ways for people to connect with the arts. And that's unique for Charlottesville and the area, I think.
I think in some ways it's also a weakness as to how some people might perceive the value of the arts. That they think, I don't have to go spend money for that. I can just go do something free. I think that can be both.
I'm sort of struggling with how I want to articulate this, but when Greg brought up what he said about ways of learning, my eyes started to glaze over when you all started talking about computers. it's because I'm such a materialist. I'm a clay artist, and I've worked in all of the craft media. And this approach to the arts through computers leaves me feeling like I don't have any handle on it at all. And my kids go to the Waldorf school, where what do? In kindergarten, first of all, they don't learn to read until third grade. And they don't do computers the entire time they're there. But in kindergarten, they start doing handwork. And they start with finger knitting, and then they move up to knitting with needles, and then they start crocheting, and in third grade they make their own hats. And I think that while we progress into the 21st century, we also can't forget that children need contact with the natural world, and they need to have the experience of creating things from raw materials. And that's probably one of the biggest things that's missing for them now, and the biggest reason we're having problems with kids as they grow up is that they don't have any grounding in the real natural world.
Aren't they also deprived of play?
Kids?
Yes.
Play is sort of like it's part of the curriculum. It's part of the curriculum. Third grade. Every kid has to fire a piece in them. Make a piece
in
out of clay.
School?
Clay is part of skill.
That's
what?
Good. I thought you said play.
Oh, I said play.
Yeah.
So I heard clay.
We have 15 minutes left, and I don't want to waste those 15 minutes. So I think we should switch gears a little bit and start making some synthesis notes together. And once we get some of the, I threw some words out earlier, but let's repeat them and alter them and add to them and come up with a sort of a hit list of what we've centered around today and then talk about next steps, what we're going to do about it and how PCA can help. So who wants to start with a summarizing thought for what we discussed? Anybody? Well, I'll start by saying access to the arts, and I think that incorporates a lot of different subtopics, such as transportation. Information.
Funding.
Appeal, so interest or maybe this is the whole list. Maybe access is heading.
I think diversity is another issue that came up again and again. Diversity of our audiences, you know, whether it's low-income people of color or older people, and then diversity of our organizations. Some of our organizations are large. Some of them are quite small. We do all sorts of different kinds of arts. Some of us love computers, and some of us do stuff with Earth. That's an opportunity and a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity because we offer a rich selection of things for, you know, something for everybody, it's a challenge. It makes it harder for us to work together. It's like herding cats. And, you know, we're not like the Chamber of Commerce. You know, we don't come with a representative and an agenda for the legislature and a big bunch of funding to take, you know, senators out for steak dinners. We're you know, by nature, we're sort of independent thinkers and independent doers.
You say consolidation.
Consolidation. And collaboration, can we make that two things? Or is that not two things?
I think collaboration, I think consolidation is a part of collaboration.
I think the families came up quite a parent, the role of parents and families, both in terms of school arts education and out-of-school arts education. We didn't talk about it a lot, but it was something that came up, we came back to a few times.
And I would like to say that it starts earlier than school. It starts way back at the beginning.
Is there anything else that we are not, we're missing?
Relation of arts and entertainment. You know, arts and pop culture. Are we going to use the 50 Cent video? Or are we going to insist that people learn about Vincent Van Gogh?
Which kind of, to me, gets to a bigger thing, maybe purpose. You know, what is the real purpose of this? The purpose of the arts, the meaning of the arts. How do we get at that, and how is that communicated?
I think technology is a subtopic there.
Maggie, you didn't talk... The group didn't talk much about arts for the elderly, if we can say that, or seniors, or whatever you want to call them.
Maybe we should.
But there are a lot of opportunities, and people find out that as soon as you offer seniors anything, they will come. Mm-hmm. Particularly if they have transportation, of course, and safety. They are concerned about that. But that's the one thing that seniors will go to. I mean, that's their first desire of all courses that are offered through the University of Continuing Ed, through OSSE, through Arts and Rec, through Senior Center, all those. And adults or older people are so fascinated by just the idea of being able to discuss and not be criticized and not and say they don't like certain things. I mean, that's part of the whole learning process, I think.
I think that's sort of part of both the family and the access topics. You know, you get family kind of looks at the way different ages are connected to the arts and the way they're doing it together. And access, I think, both for young people and elderly people, there are some serious access challenges. And then we also haven't mentioned people with disabilities, which I think falls under the access category too. We're lucky to have various special arts in our community, which is part of the Charlottesville Parks and Recreation or Charlottesville Albemarle Parks and Recreation. But it's a topic that we didn't really discuss today.
Well, it's not only with them, it's inclusion. It's not setting them totally apart with their disabilities, but including them. That's very important.
You know, I think another thing in here, too, to be thinking about, I always come at these things a little bit from a business mindset, and I love everything you said, because I'm thinking in terms of the whole design to production and all the relative, you know, jump-off points from vision through implementation and how that makes a person really embrace something and make it their own, and they can bring it into technology or through hands-on through the earth. I mean, there's just a lot of great jump-offs there. And from a business point of view, there's a whole continuum when you're, you know, running a company of how those things work and how you value the people who are part of making those things happen. But one of the things that the Virginia Commission and some of the other organizations in the state have come together and really looked at is the fact that we're not doing a really good job putting our message out there. And the question then becomes, what is our message? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we want to take them as our role model and use the precedents they're setting right now in the state, I mean, there's some great ones. I mean, the Tourism Corporation now has come out with Live Passionately. I mean, how we could go all day with everyone in their different type of art and how passionate it is and how you could weave that in. I think if we started leveraging some of our messages here in Charlottesville, what is our message here in Charlottesville on a global level regarding the arts, and then how do we get that out there from an advocacy point of view so that it benefits all the constituencies, the seniors, the children, the teachers, the parents, everybody.
That's exactly the topic of
marketing Charlottesville as a creative community, which is our next.
Oh, that's the next one.
It's January 13th, but that's what we're kind of looking at. But these are all very interconnected. They're not three, you know, distinct topics necessarily. They're all different ways of looking at the same question, really.
There is almost no network at all for children with special needs in the Charlottesville area, because I teach a class for children with special needs, from Down syndrome to autism, and it's just over and over again, I'm learning there is absolutely, there's no central system for everybody to be able to know what's available.
Well, there is through the City Parks and Rec Therapeutic, the Very Special Arts has quite a network out there. How come we're missing you?
I don't know.
So that's good for me to hear. I'll pass that right back.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring us to a close because we have about 8 minutes left. I don't want to spend too long on it, but I want to explore some next steps. Would you be interested in potentially doing breaking up and doing some brown bag follow-up sessions? Would you like us to start a listserv through which we can decide whether or not we'd like to do some follow-up stuff? Do you think we've covered a lot of ground and that we could come back together a year from now and talk again? Or do we need more collaboration? Do we need to broaden the group, bring more people into the circle and expand the conversation?
What would the end result of the subcommittee meetings be?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that you're as good a group to answer it as I am, or we are, but there may not really be an end result other than continuing to ask questions. I know there's some projects that PCA has in the planning stage that very much directly relate to the stuff that we talked about today, transportation, access, outreach to communities with income challenges or special needs. And this has been very helpful for PCA in terms of validating some of our sense from less formal communication that these are needs. So I'm not saying that everything that comes out of these conversations is something that PCA will have the capacity to respond to, but one thing that we can do is begin kind of coming up with a more formal list of what the needs are so that we can communicate with community leaders about the things that are really lacking in our area. So there are action steps that can be taken that don't require a big program budget and big staff, but I think that we are a resourceful group and can begin to determine whether or not those steps are really needed or just the value of exchange is something that's an end in and of itself.
I'd be interested in doing like a book study group, you know, looking at book I was talking about, studio thinking, because I think there's really a whole lot in that. If some people are interested in looking at that, maybe I could send a summer to you or something.
Do you want to? Greg has one.
You have it?
We have a tiny one, but it's built on, right now it's Jim Collins, it's Good to Great, so it's just nonprofits getting together to talk about its concepts. But it's a book club, and it's open, and we have yet to finish that. We have a couple chapters left, but.
Mm-hmm. How is?
I don't know if it's been, has it been helpful?
It has been helpful, and I think that other, that maybe just as a model, not necessarily that everyone looks at the same book, but
right.
To begin a list of books that people want to look at, and I don't think that PCA could coordinate it, but informally to begin sharing potential topics or potential books to.
I mean, A Whole New Mind would be another one, too, if people weren't familiar with that, because it looks at story and, really the way it looks at curriculum is really interesting, what's important in education, story and empathy and play and, it's really pretty cool.
I know through this group that a lot of common problems surface and then you're able to collectively think about it and work on it when you see each other on the street or you're working on certain things.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, Megan, that maybe
really
for right
helpful.
Now that it's enough that everybody's seen each other and heard where they are and their problems, and I think there'll be a lot of connections made.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm thinking about your art drinks at Zinc's. That might be a great place for people
to
come together.
Second Wednesday of every month, this is a little flyer in your folder, but PCA is inviting all arts-interested people to join us at Zinc, which is a restaurant and bar on West Main Street, from 5:30 to 7:30, the second Wednesday of every month, so next Wednesday. And we're going to just have no program whatsoever, but give a place and time for people interested in the arts to connect. And
Our first one was last month, and we had 50-some people there in and out throughout the evening, and we hope it will grow, and it may be just a very informal way to reconnect with folks who have similar interests or concerns. I don't know about an email list. I think email is actually a pretty difficult way to keep a conversation going because it's so overused. But if you guys would like to start an email list where we can follow up and, you know, set up a brown bag lunch one day to kind of reconvene, I'd be happy to do that. But I'm not going to do it if it's just going to clog inboxes.
Is there a website? We've always talked about a website. We don't have the capacity to do the resources through the bridge, but we wanted something community-wide that addressed a lot of these issues and was a database so that, you know, we could find out what Damani shared about, you know, different groups and busing and all that. So I don't know if that's who could design that or build that or have that as a resource for everybody to access, and then it's known that it's a central piece.
CharlottesvilleArts.org is the beginning of something like that, and we have a lot of work to do. We're going to be hopefully rebuilding our database this year, and as much as possible make that database connect directly to our directories listings on the website so that it will be a tool for the whole arts community to use to connect with one another. And we could explore ways to do sort of a posting, you know, announcement posting board. But one of the challenges is that it's a relatively new site, and we still need to get people going to it, understanding that there are hundreds of calendar events a month. There's hundreds of organizations listed on the directory. There's a blog that has announcements. So it's like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around, I don't know exactly how people are using the site, but I think over time, as we get more information up there and more groups like this one can learn that it's a resource here, we can build it and expand it. And if you're on our website and think, hey, we could really use something like this here, just email us and we'll try to find a way to add it to the resource. But I don't know if that's a solution. It's at least one place to begin to look, and we can build on it as you guys would like. I want to close again by thanking, you know, Harvest Moon Catering, Charlottesville Podcasting Network. The city of Charlottesville allowed us to use the space without some of the normal fees associated with it, and that's very generous of them. And I finally want to thank PCA members. This is a free program. Our budget at PCA is minuscule. We have all part-time staff. And the support of our members is really what's going to help us continue to do these things over time. The basic membership level is $35. Many of you are already members, and I can't thank you enough for your support. And we hope that everyone that comes to our creative conversations and finds these programs useful will understand why a $35 investment a year is a deal. And there's a list of the things that PCA does, and as I said, we're working on some new initiatives that are really closely related to some of these things and at least a year away, but I think that hopefully PCA will migrate into something that is really directly related to what you need and what you want to see in an arts council, and the engagement that you provided today and your thoughtful comments are just, you know, priceless. So thank you so much for coming. And I think that's pretty much it. Oh, I have one more thing.